This is Jan Cox, talk number 63, recorded on March 24th, 1983.
After originally telling some of you, or all of you people out in Oregon, at least in passing, the benefits of Georgia weather compared to Eugene and its snows and spring, I don't know how to defend my mystical abilities. So if any of you are getting, you new people, getting tastes and little glimpses of things, consider, and this is not done for any historical purpose, it is for a quite real purpose because it has to do with the circuitry within inside of man and how things must move at a certain speed, on a certain level, and then why it is later that that sort of speed and at that level, no matter how extraordinary it seems, then becomes every day, and you have to press on. But some of you should have small glimpses for me to point out. There's no great mystical feat, but that I went to and have been going to some extreme, to some specific effort, especially in the beginning with you new people, of trying to disavow for you some of your mechanical fascination and imagination of what you assume the work would be. And at times I have intended to, and at times part of it has been your own acceptance of it, that this has seemed somewhat, at least at times, as being extremely practical, almost every day. And at times I have even spoken in that manner. I have pointed out things that appeared to be speaking about the forms of humanity. And with no sham humility, pointing out that if I was on the ordinary level, if we could change justice, I would be the world's greatest psychologist. And when you start seeing things, you start having more understanding, just one good glimpse above the line, and you understand more than all the psychologists in the world put together. You understand more than all the priests and rabbis put together. You're not operating, why it's unjust, you're not operating on the same level. And to get such a glimpse, regardless of the fact that some of you may at one time have had imagination that you would fool around with me or somebody and gain some kind of extraordinary powers and then go back into life by God and make your mark. But you will find that it does not work that way. That there is a continuing justice, and you get glimpses. You begin to see. You begin to be conscious. You begin to be physically, mentally, to put it as crudest description, alert in a way that cannot be taught, and that by and large is forbidden because it's simply not necessary. And you catch glimpses, and you begin to see, for me to put crude temporary descriptions again, you begin to see that all of your life you never saw the icebox over here. That all of your life you've been saying I, and there is no I in there, not like people think. And that all of your life you've accepted that there are other ordinary people, or just other people on this earth, that understand many things. That priests understand the nature of God. That scientists understand the nature of the universe. The psychologists understand the workings of the human psyche. And you suddenly get a glimpse that they do not. And that for me at one time to refer to it as a great gain, not an illusion, it's not a curse, but it is a game wherein the players do not understand the rules, they're not given the rules, because the rules continue to change as the level of consciousness rises. And that there is no one outside the field to holler down and say, well, you people are playing an imaginary game that everyone's talking about. Our whole group's over here saying that we're in touch with God, our founders were in touch with God, and here's what God wants. And you see quite clearly, you understand that I have never, as I've told you, nothing I've ever said has been an attack upon the reality behind such ideas. On the contrary, but you see that no one talking about that has any idea that the greatest dressed-up priest in the world, the Pope, anybody, saying they're doing mystical signs, doing magic, you see quite clearly that there is no difference substantially between that and a football game. And you also see that nobody sees it. But then when I say that you no longer are suffering under any illusion that I will go out in the world and become famous, you also see that they cannot see it. As pragmatic as I may make it appear at times, and taking occasions, let all you people be around and us have dances. You people go off on trips to New York or to Florida to see that nothing particularly astounding seems to go on. I don't go around brooding in a room. I don't dress up in weird costumes. It just seems rather every day. But in the fact, when you get there and begin to do this, some of you, as I ask the question again in Miami to the people sitting there, does it ever strike any of you people to ask yourself that extraordinary nonverbal question of what in the hell am I doing here? What is this? What is going on? So even though I have made some effort, what I was getting at, in a certain sense, to make this for times appear to be rather every day, it's very practical, though it seems to many of you in the beginning that you seem to begin to shed some of the fears you've had. You begin to feel that it's more acceptable just to be here and not have to be anything in particular on this planet. And all of that, I know what a relief that is. And I know that many of you new people right now, if you were to drop dead, you'd probably, if an angel swooped down and say, what's the greatest thing ever happened? You would say, meeting him, getting involved with this. I'm satisfied right now if I die. But let me remind you, that is almost nothing. I know how wonderful it is. But it's almost nothing, and let me remind you that there is an absolute astounding mystery and mysticism to this. But let me try and get you to look real quickly. That when the reality of this exists, the mystery, the mysticism of it is in you. It is not out here. It is also why all churches, all sham groups, just ordinary games that people out in life are driven to play that seem to be related to the work, seem to be some reflection of it. Notice they all must operate. They just simply do. Operate on the basis of a great external sham split. Sham display of mystery and mysticism, all the way from the churches to the gurus that I talk about and wrapped up in turbans and looking funny. But inside of you, but now some of you should be able to get a spot of this, get a glimpse of it. There is built into the system, since everyone does suffer from this non-understood suspicion, this non-understood knowledge that we are incomplete, all of humanity. This continuing drive that I should be doing something differently. I could be doing something differently. It is tied to that, that is built in the system, the desire to see something exotic, to believe that you are on the edges, externally, of a great mystery. It is the basis of the attraction of masses in the Catholic Church, and the form of the masses in the Episcopalian Church, everything, the icons, everything in temples, all of the displays they go through, all of the formalities, all of the apparent rituals that seem to serve a purpose. And that some of you should be able to look back now. Not everyone is absolutely free from this yet. I'm aware of that. But that you could walk in now, perhaps back to the church of your fathers, go back into the Catholic Church, and you'd walk back in, and under the conditions be just right, and it would almost have you move back to tears of the kind of thing you had at childhood, or the feeling of all the light coming through the windows, and it's the mass going on, and it just goes on continually, and everyone seems to know what they're doing. And it seems to represent some mystery, and they, of course, mention that it's different aspects of peace of God, Jesus dying, coming back from the death, that he has conquered death, and that you won't die. He suffered too. All of life is suffering, and someday it will be all right. But it is an external need. The need is displayed and fed externally for some form of mysticism, of a mystery. But the mystery is why we're all here. And this mystery now is being played out in front of me by some people who know it, who know the answer, or at least know more of it. They've got to be closer to the solution. They've held elections since Jesus died, and surely all these people are good men, and they must be a secret locked up in the Vatican, or each pope tells another one the secret. This is not mundane. It seems to be practical. But the most astounding mystery play, the most astounding scientific discoveries, most astounding instantaneous works of art are right in there. It is not that one begins to activate the system or that one begins to awaken, that in some way then mystery begins to surround the person, or that you will walk down the street and all the birds out of the air will fly down and sit in your hand. That you'll walk into restaurants with hostile waitresses and they will suddenly come to their senses without you doing some kind of trick, but just your presence does not make people swoon. But I do not want any of you, since I've gone this far, so I'm taking this time tonight to point that out. I don't want any of you, you're making a grave mistake. It's not going to kill you, but I just want to tell you that you're going in the wrong direction. To now feel as though you have settled into some sort of psychological commune and that everything I am up to and what I've done before you new people got here has all been some kind of form of therapy, even though I told you in the beginning it was not. There is an astounding mystery, the feeling that some of you are already getting, that you're getting up to the edge of something, or you feel like you're about to explode, or you feel like you've been walking along the edge of a cliff off and on for days. To take that fall wherein you go up instead of down, you do not fall into some state of psychological refinement. You do not fall into some dull state in some way of, hey, suddenly I'm awake and I'm the world's most boring and bland person. Externally, you could be, by the way. But it's in here that there is a continuing, and I'm saying mystery not in the sense that you normally use it, but I was using it really in the sense of the root to mysticism. That you are beginning to see that you can sit in a restaurant, you can sit on the beach, you can walk down the street, you can sit at home and stare at the wall. And literally, what many of you people had read about and imagined would happen to you years ago, the kind of reflections that come out in ordinary occult and mystical literature, the whole universe exists in here, not for ordinary people. In a mechanical sense, I could say that's true, and everything being a reflection of something else. But you can go places that you've never been. You can experience things that have never happened. That you can get in situations wherein you have never been in that exact situation, and you can remember a past that you did not have. That is, remember 2 weeks ago I was mentioning in regards to a question about space, and I started making up examples about someone walking up to a bus stop. Just suddenly, your unit, your little organism, just suddenly stopped. And if you are alert enough in the work sense, there was no decision. You didn't plan, well, I'm going to go about 2 more feet. I was pointing out that, which all of you should be able to hear some piece of. It's just another manifestation of the way life operates. You just get to a certain point and you stop. And I point out how, from an ordinary viewpoint, people could attempt to make some psychological arguments based upon this fat woman, the closest you were red hair reminded you of your mother, and all of that. You can go into a situation and you can see something. I don't want to describe it much more because it will distract you, because the words, again, start falling apart. But you can be in a situation wherein you have never, in your conscious past, since you've been struggling to awaken, and perhaps never in your ordinary past, that this has never happened, but you can see right then, if you had been asleep, and if this had happened to you, how you, what appeared to be you, would have reacted. And therefore, you've got a memory of a past that you did not even have. I can't give away all the secrets, but at times, and some of you have talked to me, or some of you might just find me sitting here some nights talking. Although you say I don't encourage it and it won't do any good. Some of you may find astounding that I can just sit here and talk. Or me making jokes about going on with public meetings 30 minutes beforehand, I usually turn to one or two people that's never heard it before, and I say, where's that speech outline I told you write to me last week? It is also close to what I pointed out to you, of people worrying about trying to follow down the lost gears of Jesus, or people trying to follow the footsteps of Gurdjieff, where did he get all this? And I point out to you that Jesus didn't have to go anywhere if there was such a person. That someone who is conscious in that way, he could have laid in bed 2 or 3 years. He could have gone off and fooled around in Singapore or somewhere. Who knows? But he did not have to go anywhere. There's no need going out trying to find that he moved down and studied with some of the mystics in Egypt, or that he went to India and found Buddha's illegitimate son. Everything astounding is right above that line. You can know things that you have no business knowing. You can know things about fields that you've got no business knowing. And it's no longer a game. It's nothing to show off. It's nothing to oppress anybody. But it is this, that even then a comic book you can learn from, because the source is no longer important. You're conscious on a different level. You can just overhear somebody say something on a street corner. And some of you are beginning to get little pieces of this. And you can learn something. And it has nothing to do, in a sense, with who said it, what the circumstance was. Because it is you operating. It is not this external energy flowing. It is not something that happened that made you suddenly come to your senses in some way. What you understood is then one of my fictitious angels of some kind, that there you stood at a bus stop, and just some kind of chatter was going on behind you, and suddenly it sounded like for the first time you heard something, you heard one woman say, if that son of a bitch ever lays a hand on me, he's going to find out that you can't have a horse without a cart. And something went. And suddenly my little angel came down and said, wait a minute. You're one of those people trying to wake up. And I saw that gleam in your eye. What happened? I want to know. You got to tell me now. And you said, well, I suddenly heard that woman say something about you can't have a horse without a cart. And then let the angel go away and figure out what in the hell did that mean. And if you tried to explain, well, I caught a glimpse of something. Well, what? About the relationship between men and women? No. Something about animals? No. What was it about? Well, if you make me tell you, you know, you're going to fuck it up. I caught a glimpse of something, though. I want to try to get you people to consider something else. And I'll use an example. I even mentioned some of the people in Miami. We took down all the drums. Everyone was ready to play and was anxious to play. And simply because of the way things went, this was all based upon me telling you this, and it's my decision. I decided not to finish the meeting with a dance, and I just closed it and left. And everyone who went down there with me would have been quite prepared to get up. And in one sense, everyone would have enjoyed the playing. And the people there that would have stayed and participated, they would have enjoyed it as much mechanically as you people did, the people in New York. Anybody that got involved with that the first time of getting through with me holding such a public lecture and then finishing up with the dancing, but I did not. And later when we were all together back at the hotel, I just made a casual, apparently casual to those sitting there, that the old idea of throwing pearls before swine had some validity, and could any of them consider the fact that there was time you should not do something? That's about all I said. But I want you to consider, I have pulled back the phrase from the New Testament of not casting pearls before swine. It's really, I'll update it. It should really be that you do not put out your energy into a negative drain area. Now, the pearls before swine, forget who said it and what you've always heard it meant. Like everything else, I could have pulled it out of a comic book. Another phrase, but it now has so many connotations, I hesitate to continue to use it, because it's not an insult to people. It doesn't have nothing to do with a Jesus or some mystic or somebody saying, well, I am so intelligent, I understand so much, I'm not going to waste my time with fools. It's not a pessimistic, it is not a negative reality, which would only be a partial reality anyway, if you recall, the imagination. But this is not simply true on large scales, and if I didn't make that, if I didn't point clear enough any of you to hear it, it is simply at times, we could set up public meetings here, we could set up to get the fake church going. And let's say that we're announced meeting 6 nights a week, and I was going to be here 6 nights a week. There would be nights that I would show up, and I would not say anything. We'd just simply put on a play or do something, but I would do whatever process I use. I would ascertain that I was not even going to spend any time talking to the group assembled. I was not going to let the people here in the group even participate by getting up and playing, because what they normally get out of it would have been lacking. It was a case of turning energy toward a negative drain area. It is, in a true objective sense, it is wasting your time squared. Let me try again. This is not a comment on the people down there. It's not an attack that they were a waste of my time. It was not what I'm not what I'm saying is not that all the fine people who went with me are so awake, so involved with the work, that they should not soil their hands psychologically to get up and play and spend any more time with a group of such useless people. It's not that. And he's saying that an extreme waste of time, it's not in any ordinary, that's not being conveyed by any ordinary definition of those words. It's not that I am wasting my time with you people. It's worse than that. It's not that you're wasting time, but you are throwing away something. Now, what I was going to try and get you to consider, if any of you have followed any of this, is not just on some wide basis, not just me, not talking to some group. You have got to see that on a personal level, when you begin to have some understanding, those of you that worried some in the beginning that this was some kind of secret organization, we think people not to talk about it. You have got to begin to see that you get a glimpse of something, and if you go out and try and use that with ordinary people, if you go out and try to discuss that, something terrible is going to happen. You're not going to help anybody, which is not even the point, but you're going to find out that you lost something. That begins to be, have a little feeling that in the past I've had people express to me quite well as, I found myself talking about such and such to somebody, and suddenly I felt like, yeah. Suddenly I wish I could back up in horizontal time a minute ago, and I had never started this with those people. Suddenly my tongue wouldn't work. It was like somebody filled my mouth with soap. That it seemed to reach way down in here somewhere, which is somewhere. You cannot take that which you begin to see and use it as some sort of toy. You cannot use it as an experiment. All of you will do this. I can tell you absolutely do not, or I'll throw you out, and all of you will do it. I know that. You won't do it to try and spite me or get around some rule I made, but everyone goes through that, that you want to turn to somebody. You begin to get a glimpse of something, and somebody that you know, or somebody that you meet outside this group, Since all of them's heard the same thing, and you assume that they'll probably see what I saw, or if they hadn't already seen it, there's somebody you know outside of here to talk to them. Or just be sitting on a bus. And somebody bring you into conversation. They start telling their woes about life, and it suddenly gets to a place that's something you've just seen recently. And it's just, the person looks like they're an ordinary human. They're sitting right next to you, and they nod, they talk. And then you say a few comments. They seem to listen. They seem to be very sincere. They seem to be concerned about this problem. They seem to have some, quote, intelligence. And they get through, and you say, that's interesting. Might I point this out? And you start trying to take something of an extraordinary nature. Forget any judgmental value of the size of this, but something that you have seen on your own. In some glimmer, you were conscious in a way that ordinary humanity is not, and that you never had been. And you turn to an ordinary person and you say, by all appearances, you're seeking to do nothing, but perhaps get this person to look at it a different way, or perhaps get them over wringing their hands and contemplating suicide. If they could just get a glimpse of what you're talking about, and they sound so close to it, the way they were talking. You say, could I point this out to you? You're all going to do it. But as soon as you feel that drain, as soon as you feel that bad taste, as soon as you wish that you could roll your tongue backwards in time, and that you had not done this, I'm telling you now, do not forget that. You cannot do that. You will get a taste of what I'm talking about. But you cannot throw pearls in the mud. Because there's a limited amount. And past a certain point, things you throw down, you can't really pick back up. Energy that you let drain out, even in the guise of attempting to help someone, past a certain point, you cannot revive it. It will literally interfere with what you understood. I could even, in fact, explain that a little in apparently psychological terms where it would make sense, but I'm not going to. Some of you can probably put some words on it that would almost make sense as far as what appeared to be an explanation, but you can try to pass on something that you understand. It's somewhat now in the work sense of being conscious of something outside the hold of the ordinary level. And not only does the other person not hear it, but it then confuses you in a sense. I'm not going to explain it, but you'll find out it does. Last week, if you remember, someone asked a question. They used the term logical thought, asking about considering logical thought. See if you can catch a glimpse again of how things may be, as Brother Kairu at one time said that they were upside down. As I said, he was being charitable in that description. Because upside down is just taking in consideration three dimensions, even two dimensions with some people. But another case of that which appears to be one thing in life that all of humanity would agree with, and that all of you from the line down had always agreed with. Because you were in the correct concert with the rest of humanity. They were saying on the news something about the president starting a new, or encouraging them to start trying to build outer space weaponry, satellite lasers or something. I didn't hear it all. But I heard some commentator say after he delivered this speech, and everyone realized the ramifications that we're now going into the 21st century of self-destruction, and that sort of thing. And he concluded his little report or commentary on his final words were, and so warfare moves away from the planet into what many of us, or into what humanity had hoped would be the last frontier of peace, space. Everyone follow that. That was more or less his words. So now warfare moves out into space for humanity had hoped, had expected would be the final, the last frontier of peace. Does everyone hear what the man was saying? And all over the world, right-thinking people, all the way from Russia back over here to China and everywhere, That sounds logical. Sounds extremely logical. Because what it's saying is the logic. Now, we're going to start planning to send up satellites and floating arsenals of laser beams. We don't have to worry about atomic bombs. How irrational. How mad. But now they're planning it. And we were hoping, we were expecting that space would be the last frontier of peace. Now listen, if you want to hear upside down, how illogical can it be? On what basis do they expect that space is going to be the last frontier of peace? There is no basis for that. Absolutely not. But there was a apparently well-educated, at least he could speak well. He's on network radio. A man of some reputation, probably getting a fair salary. Somebody, somewhere, respects his views enough to put him in such a position. And he points out that which on the surface, and still does to everyone else, appears to be the height of reasonableness. Almost a sad sigh over the madness of humanity. That now it's going into space. When we expected that that would be the last frontier of human peace. And nothing could be more illogical. There is no justification whatsoever for that man or to anybody to have such an expectation. On what basis is that made? Now you're back to there's energy flowing through humanity wherein they are spokesmen. Being forced to speak for that which does not exist as yet. They are unknowing spokesmen of what tomorrow will be. Whether tomorrow be tomorrow or 10,000 years from now or 1,000 years. But the part that evidently was too fast for all of you, almost. Remember, if I have to keep doing this, I'm not attacking the man. We're not laughing at humanity. That if you were living from the line down, I would expect all of you to be civilized enough that if you were fast asleep and you heard such a comment, that you in some manner internally would agree. That have not the leaders of this world, has it not gone far enough that they got us now perched on the edge, that the miscalculation of one computer could send tons of radioactive explosions and destroy this planet? That's not enough for these people. Now they're going to make plans to send it out here to where they can be these floating stations of death that at any time can just go zap and blow up a whole country. And we were all, humanity, expecting, at least in space, at least in space, there'd be some chance for peace. From the line down, all of you, the whole world, but all of you, fast asleep, just being yourself, in some manner should have gone, Jesus, yeah. But do you see that it is absolutely upside down? For humanity, and I'm just picking out one example, to make such a cry of we were expecting such and such, and now look at the sorry mess that may happen. When there is absolutely no, if you were going to talk logical thoughts in an objective sense, there is no basis, there is no premise for that. All a person has to do is look around at humanity, look around at history. You're talking about seconds. Then from the line down, look right down your nervous system. There's all the wars going on, all the hatred. But then, there's something else afoot that men are continually forced. They open their mouth and these things come out about our great hopes for peace are now dashed. What great hopes for peace? Where did this come from? Can any of you get a glimpse when I can say that the work is absolutely logical, but do you see that what passes for logic has no basis? Not for ordinary humanity. They're serving a purpose, and it is serving a purpose for these sounds, for these so-called ideas to be forced out of people. They're conduits. They're passing energy, and they're talking about tomorrow. They're talking about the way things will be. They're talking about the direction in which humanity is headed. But there is no basis for any ordinary human to say, here they are going to put up laser stations, or they're going to start working on them now. And we were hoping, finally, that at least now going out into space, there it is, virgin, untouched. They don't know from hostility and bombs. Nice and calm. And now humanity is going to set up these death stations. What a disappointment. Based upon what? In what way is a man, not just that man, of course, but everybody in the world going, on what basis are they disappointed? You could also, those of you that one time had any such interest, which I could read on some of your little faces when I first saw you, that some of you did, ideas about I'm going to learn how to read the future. So some of you are trying to read the past and talk to the dead, but in some way I will be able to read the future and tarot cards and throwing down the chitlins, reading tea leaves. It is not that there's no basis in that. Again, I point to you, humanity cannot simply invent something. Those who say they can read minds to tell the future, you know, if any of you still believe that, keep it hidden a wee bit longer from me. But there is a reality to it. But you're faced again with a situation of everything being upside down and backwards. To believe that some woman somewhere, some man, is sitting down there casting horoscopes, or casting horoscopes for trends in the stock market, or casting horoscopes for whole nations, or that in some ways in touch with the dead Yugoslavian coal miner that talks to her and tells her what's going to happen in the future. All right, for any of you to believe that, and many people throughout the world, you weren't exceptionally dumb to be interested in that. But to believe that, it's on what basis? Well, the person that said things that seemed logical to me, they talked to me and asked me what sign I was born under. And they said, well, you're the type of person. Very interesting. When I first saw you, I could tell the way you came in and sat down here. I could feel the vibrations. Even before you told me your sign, I could have guessed it, by the way. I knew you were Gemini. It's the kind of feeling that seems to encase you many times of having expectations of others. And then when all the forces arrange in such a way, which being a Gemini and you were born and you were on the cusp or whatever it is, and then this feeling of intense disappointment when others do not live up. Yes, that is me. That's me. Well, I'm now going to predict the kinds of things you should look for. But on what basis? What is the logical premise that this is going to be based upon? How is it? You can switch back right quick to my example of pulling the man off the radio. Of what a black day in history to start working on death rays floating out in space when we thought that would be the last frontier, the last chance for peace. And there is absolutely, to use any term of the word logical, there is no logical premise for that man having such a hope. There is no logical premise for humanity having such an expectation of that. But everything that then humanity in general believes, that professes to believe, there is no logical basis for it. That all the religions of the world say something about that man will come back as himself. That man will die, and if you have been a believer in this church, in this religion, then you certainly, you're not going to die like the dirty dog death of the infidels. You will go to paradise. You will go to heaven. And in general, majority of humanity, the last time I saw any polls in their four stamps, the majority of humanity still says, yeah, I believe that. On what basis? You can take that which seems to be logical, that should have some premise, and you can take that which has no premise, which would be illogical, and you can identify one of those as being apparently humanity. You can identify one as being the worst. And you can, in passing, accept me saying periodically that this is absolute insanity. This is a height to be logic. But all you have got to do shift your eyes about this much, and they change places. Not through some trick, but as a part of the glimpse of seeing that everything that goes out on out here, and everything that goes on in here below the line, the way in which everyone is connected to this greater nervous system, to that level of consciousness, that all of that which is said to be logical, all of that which is accepted as true, is not. All of you should consider any time that the word logical springs to your mind. You should try and consider what I mean, what I may mean, what I may be trying to point at behind the word consider. Because it is not logic. It is not starting somewhere. It is not saying, even the ordinary people do not operate in this manner. When they say something is logical, or when they hear something stated, and they say, well, that's illogical. What they're saying silently is that already there is an accepted premise on their part, a set of premises, sets of opinions, sets of accepted facts, an internal arrangement wherein what you have just stated, what they just heard, does not fit in this. And so when they say, that's illogical, especially two or three other people staying around, and they all agree. And now this person who made the statement stands. No one can analyze this because they're not supposed to. They're not even supposed to be particularly aware of it. What you just said is illogical. Am I right or am I wrong? And other people, yeah. And they kind of chuckle. It is operating on the basis that whenever someone concludes that something is illogical, irrational, it cannot be true. And now let us go from my example, these people out there, to that you hear something on the radio, overhear something, thing on a street corner. You remember something you read yesterday in the newspaper. And there is this, it goes through everyone unanalyzed besides you people, right? This continuing attempt to be aware of what is going on in there. To see the workings of this thing that seems to be the culmination of all man's nervous system circuitry. And it is continually involved with whatever words you're seems to use, but it's continually involved with these judgments of that's not true. That's illogical. That's insane. That's crazy. That's nuts. Well, what you are stating, what this nervous system is stating, is the premises that I have already accepted, that which I accept to be true and factual and possible and rational. What you have just said will not fit in this. But then see if you can remember my example of, and my God, floating death stations when we were expecting that space would be the last frontier of peace, that it sounds so touching, it sounds so reasonable. And I have already asked you twice, there is not one modicum of evidence or experience in humanity for anyone to say that. It is the, from one viewpoint, it is the epitome of insanity. For us to expect that was the last frontier space of peace. The man is an absolute raving maniac. Where did he ever get history from? Where has he been all of his life for 30 or 40 years? Has he lived in a closet? Does he not know what's going on? He's never read the paper. He's never been mad. He's never been aware that he's been mad. It is absolute insanity. But it is logical insanity. It is accepted insanity because he says it, and as I pointed out to you, all of you, from the line down, all of humanity, at least the vast majority of it, under the right conditions, should go. It's a shame. I'm just as shocked and disappointed as you are, Mr. Commentator. And the same thing would apply to, from here down, everyone agreeing to that. Well, you're just as nuts as he is. All of you people have been living in a plastic bag with your ears stopped up. You have just popped out. You just came out of an egg. You have no idea where you are. You don't know anything about the nature of human life. for you to say, well, and that's what we expected, was the last frontier of peace. Considering, once you find out what I mean, by the time you find out what I mean, then you find your own way to do it. Because it's not just a task. I now keep presenting it as a task, and I keep talking to you about it, and I keep using the clacks, trying to get you to see it just floating. I described it to you. I may have to change it again, but I've already given you, at least up until now, the best verbal description of the one I like, is being able to remember something without thinking about it. So be able to be conscious of something, but not simply be limited to the mechanical flow of consciousness. It is not simply something running through the nervous system. It seems to run up here that something reminded you of something, and then there's reminded you of something else, and now you are reliving it, going through the mechanical chewing on it, or whatever it is. To consider something, such as the clack, or begin to think that you are beginning to suspect something about the nature of your relationship between you and somebody else. There's something about the nature of you always feeling, so constantly feeling bashful. You begin to get a feeling I'm about. I just smell it. I can sense it in some way that's absolutely logical. But I smell that I'm close to something with this. You've got to find out that there is no way, once you start doing that, to wrestle down what this vague odor, this suspicion, and some way I'm going to grab it and choke it, and I'm going to put words on it. You can do that. But you're going to find out it's the same thing as pulling pearls before swine. You've just done it internally. Until it hits you, until you get a glimpse of something, to consider something, is you don't go with the original premise. Even when it's unstated, you don't start on the basis of, well, I'm beginning to suspect so-and-so, and these words, a particular form comes to mind. And it hits you, and then something in the nervous system says, well, wait, you know, that's illogical. That can very well be the end of it, at least for a while. It just makes a statement, boom, and it's grounded out. Because everything in your nervous system is in agreement. You have then become humanity, agreeing with this commentator when he says, and that was our hope, that that would be the last frontier of peace. And all of humanity goes, yeah. Instead of all of humanity and a commentator, I consider it's the nervous system within you, and that which you were beginning to get a glimpse of, everything from here down, something starts floating up in here that you begin to suspect something. It just takes hours, maybe days, maybe weeks. It's like a fly keeps getting through here. A little spark comes from somewhere, and you just have this thing, something's about to happen. I'm about to step in the ditch. I'm about to blow up, or I'm beginning to get a glimpse. Maybe it is about your relationship with somebody, and you keep looking at the person, and it's almost like the icebox. I'm seeing them differently. Something's happening. I don't seem to be as angry, and I hadn't done anything special to cause this. My feelings seem to be different. To consider something is to try and keep that awareness, to try and bring it back on, but not in some apparently stable fashion. Not to sit down and I'm going to figure this out. Much less let it hit in the nervous system and it make an absolute instantaneous judgment about it. Such as, well, no, that's irrational. Or just as bad, it could accept it in some way and say, wait a minute. I remember from college one time that, of course, I'm putting words on thoughts, and by now you should know this is not exactly the way it goes. The thing comes back, something, suddenly you remember a professor one time saying in Psychology 102 that Freud had said such and such about the relationship between the sexes once a man had grown up in an environment without a father and a mother acted in such and such way, and it all hit you like that, and perhaps instead of the nervous system saying it's irrational, it may go, that's what it was. But in any case, you have taken a very fragile bird, a glass bird, and you have grabbed it and gone, you have taken something that was floating. You was taking something that was not an absolute connected part to this ordinary nervous system. It was like the loose wire that I have described in that manner, having a spark up there, and you have pulled it back down. You have put it out. But it does, from an ordinary viewpoint, if you can hear me, that can pass for some kind of understanding with ordinary people. Well, something kept troubling me about such and such. Now I realize this is the classic reflection of that great Freudian case having to do with Mrs. X in Vienna in 1927. And nothing's happened. Considering something has no beginning, and if it has an end, nobody knows it but you, which it doesn't. But when you think you're beginning to see one little piece about something, to consider something is not to put your hands on it. That is, not let this nervous system suck it back down in there. It's not to take its word for anything. If you can't believe a commentary on network TV, if you can't believe anybody, you cannot leave it to the hands of this. Plus, you have got to begin to have some idea of it now. But up until now, by and large, everything you've ever done has been a waste of time. That is, vis-a-vis you attempting to in some way awaken. I'm going to wrestle my psychology. I'm going to pull at my soul. I'm going to study my mind. I'm going to beat on my forehead. I'm going to take drugs. I'm going to think only serious thoughts. I'm going to only hang around serious people. It does not do anything. Because from here down, it's all captivity. From here down, it's all illusion that I may be doing something. But by now, you should have some idea that it was all an illusion. That nothing happened. I want everyone to consider what I mentioned last week about that which seems to be oneself as not being the enemy. I want you to consider that as seriously, more seriously than anything you have attempted to do, because I am making personal threats to myself, perhaps next week, to get real close to hinting around at something that many of you may find more astounding than anything that's happened yet. It gets close to a major league secret. But consider this. Of wasting energy, pearls before swine. It is also connected with how much I can tell you people. It's not that you're a swine or that you're a mud or a waste of time or I wouldn't be here. But it's the level of how much energy it's going to expend. I've told you there's one secret that I can never tell you. If there's anybody else in the same position as me, they could never tell you. They never would tell you. And there's a reason. But between here and there, I can keep refining them out. I can move you closer and closer, in a sense, to Alabama. But notice, you got to get over there. I'm not picking people up and carrying you. There is a limit to what I can tell you. There's a limit to how much I can refine the maps themselves. But I am getting very tempted to draw you some outlines very close to what we're talking about that moves into major league secrets. But I can't waste it. And the time is auspicious right now. It's the planets and all that shit. Everything is in good shape. Plus, if you remember, starting tomorrow is the beginning of St. Quantum's festival with us. But I am very tempted. Unless something drastic happens, I will probably succumb to this temptation next week. But I want to give you one more week. I want you to seriously consider that this thing is not an enemy. It's not an ally either. It's no particular friend. But at least on the basis that this thing, and you got to see it, and I just go around repeating what I said, but to get some sense of what I'm saying, that there is no enemy within here. No matter how different from here down you consider yourself to be from everyone else in here. at least from a few people, everyone here, from here down, you look around, you think there's some people in here that's just almost the opposite from you. You can't understand how somebody can be like that. That is, if you're down within the confines of this grimy machine operating. But then everyone feels as though these particular things I have within here, if in some way this work will help me get rid of them, help me calm my tempers, my fears, my jealousies, it is still operating on the basis that the whole world is, that there is a beast within me, a devil, an absolute enemy. All the way, as I've given you the historical outline, the brief one, has gone from there. Demons within me making me have evil thoughts and lusting after people that I'm not properly legally connected with, and making me wish that I had my neighbor's Cadillac, if not new ox cart, has gone from that to I have these psychological problems. I have these traumas that have been produced in the past from my childhood. It's the same thing, that all of humanity will always be this way. Well, as far as you know, as far as we're going to live. But that has always been the nature of it. The descriptions of it change as the level of consciousness has changed. But everyone, from the Pope on down, everyone feels as though they're forced to, that there is an enemy within me. There's a good part of me, which is the one right now that's aware of this, that can say there's an enemy. There's a good part of me that says I do drink too much. I got to quit running around my wife or my husband. I got to be nicer to my children. I got to stop hating people. It just seems evident. There is a good part and a bad part, because the good part's the one that can identify these bad parts. And I still hate my mother for what she did to me. But there is no enemy. There is no bad part. And nothing has happened to you that didn't happen to everyone. But the thing is not an enemy. If you would like to have me consider outlining something very close to a dangerous secret that may pop a few heads in here, I repeat, give it your most serious consideration. There is nothing to figure out. And don't fall into some sort of trap. I tried to warn you last week. This is not some form of psychology. It's not saying, oh, I guess I am all right. It's not that you're all right. Well, I guess my temper's not that bad. It doesn't matter what it is or not. What I want you to consider is that there is an instinctive, it is intrinsic, it was built into you is what I'm telling you, and that everyone suffers from it, that I have an enemy within here. And I am telling you that I am not the enemy. What seems to be you is not an enemy. It is not the enemy. It is not an enemy. It simply is. Sometimes conscious theatrics and ordinary lying and lies seem to become indistinguishable. I'm not reading all the questions, but I'm taking part of what they ask, if you heard that. I'm going to use it in the sense that someone is saying they believe that they were consciously doing something that was not themselves. And then that ordinary lying in some way can become confused with that. Now, the one way we describe this, there are very few of you people that really have any ability to consciously engage in theatrics. At least you fool yourself that you have such an ability already. Now, some of you, many of you, or this would not have held together, you new people are beginning to understand that you can refrain externally without any great difficulty under certain conditions of not responding in the ordinary way that you would have responded to things. And then some of you are beginning to find that you can have some effect over this, that you're beginning to find out that there is a reality for me saying that this thing becomes almost like a tiger behind the door. It becomes like almost extraneous noise. Like a radio playing that you hear, it's hollering, hey, fuck those people. Tell them, get them, sick them, Jack. And you hear all that and you understand that I'm a split second away. I am almost an invisible line away from this nervous system going right through and me doing what I would normally do. In a sense, that is conscious theatrics. But to have any idea that you are going to play out a role consciously, and that you're doing something that is not you, don't any of you give yourself too much credit right now. Because what it would actually amount to is first you should be considering to yourself what is meant by non-lying among ordinary people. If in any way you think that, well, I'm getting confused, if I try to consciously do something, it is a lie. Because some of you probably heard me make comments along that line that you can consciously lie to people. But you're certainly not going to do anyone any harm consciously lying because you don't see what it is yet. And that's why I'm saying that you should first consider what the ordinary people mean by the truth. Amongst ordinary people, all you're talking about, you've got two people. One person walks into a place and nobody will wait on me. Hold it behind the counter. Miss, are you coming here with me? I'm in a hurry. Can't you say I'm in a hurry? Don't you care anything about your customers? Then the girl looks over and says something. What are we talking about on the ordinary level when people say, well, you shouldn't lie? The man, the customer says, doesn't customer relationships mean anything to you people? Do you care whether I'm in the store or not? If we're going to get to what people call the truth, right now we should call it non-lying. What do they mean? Because what's going to happen is that one transfer unit is going to respond to that kind of energy in the only way it can. It's going to feed it back to this one, and it will feed it back to that. Everything will take a preordained course within given limits. Still look after your own affairs. It's not to harm the ordinary flow of your horizontal life, but to believe that you're lying to people in some way. You're in for a great relief, anyone who still thinks they have any concern over that. Because you have to first see from here down, you nor anyone has ever had any ability to either lie or not lie. It's irrelevant. There are no such words down there. It's not some theory once you see it true. People, you know, stand and say, listen, and I'm being serious. This is important business and you know it. Now first you, yeah. Now look, we got to level with one another. Our asses are on the line. Now me and you've got to level with each other. Now don't lie to me. Now forget the past. I don't care what kind of stories you told me, and I guess we all have, you know, run each other around. But I'm telling you, you've got to level with me. And it can be two guys talking about, you know, they're fixing to take a rap. They're going to be arrested for something. Their lives could be on the line. And they show it in movies. All you got to do is get half hypnotized with it, and it's a serious scene. And he said, now listen, you understand what I'm saying. We have got to be truthful with one another. And the guy said, yeah. And they're sweating bullets and worrying about what's going to happen. And you accept it as something serious that's happened to you, that this is real business. And it's not any real business. It's only real business as long as you're down here living in this and you're accepting another person as there's something solid in there. There is a Fred in there. There's a Fred inside there pacing about. He's listening to this. Not just the facial expression, but inside there's a Fred. That's the one I'm trying to get to. You hear me in there, Fred? And you're trying to ascertain that Fred's in there going, well, he's trying to figure from my own selfish viewpoint, should I level with him this time? Should I be truthful? That's why all this is operating on the basis of. And once you see that it's not true, you're literally talking about a spine, a nervous system culminating in this brain that is constantly being charged, that has a limited set of reactions. It responds to certain kinds of energy coming in, and it can only transfer it and transmit it back in a preordained, within very small limits, to reproduce it, very small perimeters. There being such perimeters is what makes people apparently be recognizable. But Fred does seem to be Fred, but it's not because there is a little Fred in here. Not because there's an invisible Fred in there all dressed up, just making decisions, deciding, will I lie to him or tell the truth? How much will I hold back? It's not, but it's because that there is this limited number of reactions that apparently amongst ordinary people makes them recognizable. The people, you say, well, I've heard all this crap in your books you wrote, but people are people. I've known Fred for years. I can predict the way he'll react. I know the kind of books he likes. I know almost any subject. We'd go out and try to pick up women. I can tell you the kind of women Fred always goes for. I know Fred. There is a Fred. But they don't hear what they're saying. They're describing there as a limited, very small. And I'm exaggerating, of course, doing this. But there is a very small set of patterns in there, of reactions. And they're constantly replayed. And Fred only constantly, no matter where he goes, they can transfer him to the other side of the world. He can be transferred from California to New York, from New York to Mexico City. And it is not the environment. It is not, what I'm saying, it's not the kind of input. It's because there is only a limited ability within here to hear, to see, to take in information, to take in energy. And Fred will be drawn to, he will only accept that kind of energy. This apropos to what seems to be his personality. He will only accept it whether he is living in Los Angeles, whether he's living in Chicago, whether he's living in Mexico City. So it doesn't matter the external. But then listen real quick. Then an ordinary person can say, aha, well, there's proof. People are somebody. You can change the environment and they say the same. You got to be fast. Of course, once you see it, you don't have to be fast. You just greatly believe. It's not that there is a thread, but there is a very small, limited number and parameters of the kind of energies he can take in, that he does take in, and that he then transforms. So the idea that these two people are seriously talking, and I'm saying, you have got to tell me the truth. Now look me in the eye. Are you telling me the truth this time? And the person says, yeah. That's what makes some of this interesting sometimes, is all of this preaching I do, and as I told you, the truth, all you got to do is see it, and all this is irrelevant. And if we go back and calculate how many hours I've spent talking about one particular thing, and all you do is see it, we'll talk about justice. And you see it just like that, and all this is gone. But back to what I was saying. And Fred says, yeah, I'm telling the truth this time. And let's say you're watching a movie, and people sit there. You do it internally. You're trying to guess, is Fred telling the truth? Is he about to set him up to take the fall? And you can only become identified with such as that, with movies, reading, or your own mind, by not being conscious in this non-mechanical way. You have got to be down here playing in the same game as them to accept that. Because there is no one internally in that Fred. Of course, you got everywhere you need to look. You don't need a movie. It just seems like, you know, we keep talking about Alabama and this and that. Remember, always talking about it. But to believe, well, I go around and sometimes I lie to people and sometimes I don't. You're back in a playpen. But conscious theatrics, as close as you're coming out, is what you should be doing anyway. It's not to harm people. Do not encourage their condition. Sometimes, as I said, the only reason I threw it in, you cannot interfere with your own life. But by and large, that doesn't arise that much. But any kind of conscious theatrics that you should even be considering at this stage is simply not harming people. You begin to get some feel, this person wants to be mistreated. This person wants me to be insulted. They may come around and just sort of ask for it. They want me to go ahead and sing Willie Nelson songs with them. I'm not going to do it for my reasons, but even if you don't have a desire to get involved with a soap opera right then, don't even do it with them. But the kind of energy and the kind of magnetic field there are doesn't seem to be drawing you in, but just seems to be time for a social, small social lubricant. And for you to respond to something they're doing, at least don't respond in the way in which it will encourage their condition. It's not going to awaken them. But that is the closest right now that most any of you are capable of doing anything, which you should be doing, is do not kick at their machine. Don't manhandle people. Don't even go along with encouraging their condition when they holler more or less. You know, kick me. or I'm hollering that life's no good, agree with me. Don't agree. Don't preach a sermon. Don't go into casting pearls. But do not play with them. Just try your best and hung up to go into neutral. Oh, well, I don't know. You know, some people say yes, some people say no. What can I say? The observed attention toward not treating oneself as the enemy seems to dissipate the energy which feeds the first two forces. No enemy, nothing to resist. Is this also why some people could be considered, quote, too sane? Which I've used that term, some of you don't remember. People such as politicians and high society folks, because they treat themselves as special friends. I'm not sure how many of you will hear anything great immediate from this, but I'm pleased that someone began to get some sense of this anyway. It's not only that, in a sense, people can be too sane, they're even, as I've, one term I use, from a work viewpoint, they're in fact dangerous. They're serving out a proper role out in ordinary life. But people, those with ordinary humanity, if they had any heroes, I don't mean movie stars, but if ordinary people amongst themselves, if not at some famous figure, if they believe that they see people out on the street or they have passing business dealings with people that seem to always have a song in their heart, a smile on their lips, their hair blow-dried, latest of fashions, always, just everything seems to be fine, which is not necessarily the way it seems to that person, but even on that observation, those that appear to be the most at ease will lie, ordinary lie. Are the closest thing there is to living dangerous. Because they are almost the advanced proof for yesterday. Now, of course, there are no such things as things you always heard, but that comes close. And the person was correct. Politicians, it's not an attack on politicians, but those that are driven, those that are passing out the kind of energy that end up leading the horizontal world, are by and large quite dangerous. From the work viewpoint. They're not in life. Well, when I say the work viewpoint, maybe I should clear that up. They're the very ones that the work gets out of hand and in the position to do it. They say, hey, somebody go over there and see what those crazy people are doing and stop it. They don't know what they're doing. But they are the greatest, from one viewpoint, spokesman for the horizontal world. For the status quo, for the second force of life. And from their viewpoint, anything they can understand, which if anybody in the world couldn't understand the work, it would be politicians, those in that position. Then like everyone else, it's just magnified. Anything people don't understand is dangerous and got to be stopped. But they end up in a position to do it. Which I might suggest to you is another variation of why people said, render unto God that which is God, to give to Caesar that which is Caesar. And those that work should stay away from, in a certain viewpoint, from the ordinary world. If the ordinary world comes by and says, hey, we're all going down and burn down the churches and we're going to erect a new statue to our president, make him the leader of the church. You say, fine, here's my donation. I'll be done if I can. And close the door and forget it. Of course, it can be more than that also. It does not have to be that literally and physically. We're back to this. You stated that there was a certain speed at which we were all designed to operate. Is that for humanity as a whole in any given time or place or individual? The way in which I was speaking to you people when I mentioned that, I was for your individual consideration. Humanity does, but that's beyond any immediate profit for me to try and outline, but it's for you to see. When I started giving hints, like you remember when I had drawing you the triple circuitry up here. And I told you that there were two primary modes at which it operates, being constantly stimulated and then calm. Now that has to do with the speed. But all of you can find personally, unless I spent a long time, from a certain viewpoint, that I've even talked about this, because I was going to leave a lot of this to you for a little while. to try and see when I insisted. I'm telling you that all the way from the first one I drew for you all the way down to this interlaced tri-circuitry, it is real, it is physical. But not to just leave it there for you to find. I gave a few examples about people attempting to excite themselves. How much fun can somebody have? How long can you keep up with a hobby? Back when you could do things like this, how much would you go out and drink? How often would you drink? How much drugs would you take? How much TV would you watch? How many boring books would you read? How often did you want to be alone? For what length of time? How often, how consistent did you seem to need outside human stimulation, even if it was just crowds going out to the shopping center, going to a movie when you didn't care what movie, just to get out? As you can see within yourself, that I gave a fair, proper description, that there seems to be limits, that you can only stand, you only seem to seek, but then you can only stand so much excitement, then look, I gotta go. You can only drink so much coffee, and you want a beer to calm down. You can only take so many uppers, and then people want downers. You can only go out and hang around with a bunch of wild people, having a good time. Just apparently you can only do it so long, and it's not just physical tiredness now. Because it doesn't have to be physical activity. It can be talk. It can be you just out of the shopping center. It can be you at a football game. It can be you walking the streets and not even saying anything. But that you were seeking an activation. And then you know when it's enough. You have reached the maximum speed. But then there is a minimum speed. You get down to it, you lay in the house, and you watch TV, soap operas, and game shows for 4 or 5 days. You just lay in bed staring at the wall. But then suddenly it's, that's enough, by God, I gotta go out. Then the person says, if we significantly speed up or slow down, what would be the effect? Which is a good question. What you're doing to be able to do that is that you're beginning to alter the normal stability of what seems to be you. You are beginning to push at the limits that make you identifiable. That's why it makes it so difficult to do it. It makes it harder, if you can hear this right quick, and when you can really do it, it makes it impossible, literally, for you to receive. Let's say you can speed up, that you can push the limit, past the limit that you could normally take excitement. And with some of you, it would be more proper to go in the other direction. It's not that one's better than the other, one's more necessary. But if you could slow down, you can find that this does exist in me, not simply tied to the body. It's not how tired I get or how much apparent physical stamina I have. There's something else afoot. But I only go so far one way, and I go so far this way. But if you can go further in one direction, this, of course, like everything else, only applies to someone attempting to wake up. Somebody in life who does nothing to kill them. But to be able to push it, and you really get past that limit, what you have done is made it impossible, for as long as you're past that limit in one direction or the other, it makes it impossible for you to take in the normal energies you take. This is like you have shifted where you lie on the spectrum of light, the changes from speed to light, that you're in a place where only blue light gets through. You shift over here to the point where it's red light. Then the kind of energies that normally came through to you, the kind of impressions you had, the kind of things you seem to normally think about, the way you seem to think about people, that energy can't get in. You have shifted. That is a piece of why some of you at some of the past have come back and went, and you weren't exactly sure what. I made you go out and do something you'd never normally done. It seemed to, at different times, it hit different ones of you that, oh, that was exciting. That was beyond different. That was beyond weird. I thought I'd be humiliated. I thought I couldn't do it. And I got there and did it. And it was like, it wasn't even me. It was like everything I expected people to do, they didn't do. Because you weren't you. And it could be that people came by and I had you doing something, making a fool out of yourself. I shifted the speed. I told you to do it or don't come back. And let us say this is not the way it would work because everything's connected, but let us say the kind of people who went by looked and said the same things to you that they'd ordinarily say. But that is not what you apparently heard. That is not apparently what you took in. It makes it, once you can push the limit, the length of time you can stay there, you literally cannot take in the kind of energy. To put back in crude psychological terminology, for that length of time, you're not yourself. Which, as we all know, is dangerous indeed. Is there a position when sleeping that is of greater advantage regarding the opening of the two ridges that you have drawn in the spinal column? That's getting down to a very real kind of question, which I don't get a lot of. I'm not encouraging anyone. And I'm not going to give you any specific answer, but I wanted to read the question because I like the question. There is a little something that I'm not going to tell anybody, not because it's a secret, but this is very close to the question of, do my dreams mean anything? I told you all to forget about it. It's nonsense. But the truth is, they mean something. But what in the hell are you going to do with your dreams right now when you're walking around with this dream factory going all day? You know, I'm not going to let you ask me for you to get involved with what I'm going to start doing is trying to watch my dreams and make notes and figure them out. There is something that can be learned. But don't take it serious. And don't talk to me about what can we do right now with dreams until you can do something with this. And when you can do something with that, then you won't ask me about dreams. And then you won't ask, although the question, there is a certain physical reality to that question. But until you can do it in the daytime, I'm not going to have you trying to do it at night. I was going to say that laughing at looking at oneself as an ally rather than an enemy has da-da-da-da-da. The reason I read this is I wanted to point out that don't look at yourself as an ally. Not across the board. Now, if whoever wrote this, if any of you people got some sense of it this week, a sense of relief of some kind, okay. But still do not look at it that, you know, this thing is fine, that this thing is an ally. It just is. Someone, they wrote a question just doing an observation. It seemed like to them the illness would be the non-functioning or the malfunctioning or contamination of all the circuits. If anybody can see anything from that basis with a comma, all right, but I would, the rest of you have never made an observation on your own for me to read this. It is not the most beneficial way to begin and to say, well, it's a malfunctioning of all the circuits. Because for one thing, part of what I'm tempted to say gets close to what I'm threatening to point out next week, so I'm going to give you a hint before I get through this question. For one thing, that all of you should be able to observe and you can learn something from, I'm not going to spoon feed it, but I'll point out the basis of it. Talking about the three circuits connected together, you remember? My drawing, those of you who can't see it in the back, representing three reflections of the operations within an organism, within each human unit. You can observe within yourself when you get sick. Let's just say you suddenly wake up tomorrow morning and you got a terrible hacking cough and the flu. The physical entirety of one begins to drain energy in a certain manner. It drains off one of the circuits, then drains off another one, and then it gets to the third one. Well, I'm not going to give you any particular order. But there are three distinct stages to the entire organism trying to heal itself, that is, of draining off energy. I'm just going to mix them up, but some of you should immediately see what it is, and you could even don't put a period here. It will begin to wear at the body. Now remember, I'm not putting them in the right order. Then it goes far enough, and it begins to wear out one's feelings, just what seems to be ordinary emotions, that you just don't respond to a child breaking something in the house. You hear that, indeed, Russia's already announced that they're about to build a laser station. And you feel like, you know, they might as well have said, U.S. part's going to be canceled tonight on TV. I'm sick. I don't have time to worry about where the world's blowing up. That kind of feeling. And then another stage. Remember, I'm not putting these in order. But then this thing, what passes the ordinary mind, just begins to get drained to the point that you just say, I better call a doctor and get a prescription. You go over and sit down at the phone. You're suddenly aware of the fact that you've been sitting there with a phone book for about 2 minutes. And you look at it and you can't remember, what was that? Well, I think they call a TV repairman or a garage. And you look up the number and then you finally get it. You remember the doctor and you see the number and you close it. And you think, God damn, I don't remember what I saw. All right, that's the three stages. Going back to giving it crude names. It seems to drain the feelings, just ordinary feelings, kind of emotional response that seems to be you. It drains it. And it will finally, remember this is not the right order, but it'll drain up here, that you can't seem to operate, and it'll drain just the thing itself. But it goes in a particular order, according to how sick you are. Just a little minor sickness, it'll drain one of those, and that's all it takes. Just fighting for its own recovery. But it drains from one of these circuits first. It's always in the same order. So one of the three things I mentioned is just apparently being physically, up here. What am I doing sitting here with a phone book? And then the kind you hear, bombs are on the way to destroy the planet, to destroy America. And you feel like, where's the aspirin? But it goes in an order. It gets one, and it gets drained, and it goes up to the next one. And it drains this. And then the sickness goes on, and it'll go up to the third one. Anyway, all of you on your own, I told you enough. You'll be able to put something together. You'll be able to consider that just for your own experience. It's always true. It goes in that same order. You can tell how sick you are. If you need another thing to play with, it's to see how far it's going up and which circuits, it is draining. What I was threatening to give you at least a hint about. About what people, ordinary people, call psychosomatic illness. And that all of you, down in here, just probably throughout all the world, some parts of the world they would still say, well, demons got in me. And so my neighbor got mad at me and put a curse on me. But it's all the same thing. So in other words, I'm not sick. It's not my body sick. Something else has happened. Nowadays, ordinary, sophisticated people refer to it as some variation of psychosomatic illness. But how many of you can remember such as this happening? Telling somebody that you might do something. And then decide you want to do it. And you feel like that you've been called into doing it. And that up here somewhere that almost you can't get out. You, quote, gave your word and you cannot lie to them. And then you hurt yourself. Or you get sick. Or you suddenly go into some kind of mood and you get real mad. You begin to just suddenly act and you can't even find any particular illness in such a way that you agree to do something with somebody. Then they see you the next day, and after about 30 seconds, they realize, well, no, I don't want to be around you. And then you might get sick after that. Somewhere in all of that, see if you can dig up something from your own observation. And then try and consider this. In what direction did you get sick? Who is it that's, where is it in the circuit that was going to do something? And what part had no interest in doing it? And then what part may have gotten sick that didn't even, in a sense, have anything to do with the whole fucking scheme? Believe it or not, that was a hint at something astounding. Is it that one who could live above the line is not necessarily awake because although he sees, he does not understand his seeing or what he sees. quality part of that question is absolutely no, because that would be the only awakening. Such a person is not awake because it's not happened. There are people that get glimpses, I've given you that. You cannot be awake and not know it. There's no such thing as ignorant saints. There are people, I've told you, I've granted you this, but you'll be past that. There are people and some of the Indian gurus that hit this continent in the last 10 years were prime examples. The kind of guys that could sit and smile and seem to be quite happy and had nothing much to do but touch on the forehead or throw flowers and tell everybody that, you know, everything's all right or God loves you, and they would giggle. And I'm not speaking about anybody in particular that you may have seen. But I know what's involved with somebody getting a glimpse of something. That's why I said it's somebody becoming a dead-end street. That they got a glimpse of something. If you need to hear this kind of explanation anymore, they can get a glimpse of something, and that's the end of them. But there are people all over the planet that had little glimpses of something. They were just not the kind of conduits for energy that turn them into gurus of some kind. But such people are not awake. People do not. One I've used, you can see the connection. I think I had to do it in one of the books about run for your life. And if you ever pick up a book or hear you're going to meet somebody that he wrote a book or made a statement that one day, on July the 3rd, 1973, I woke up in the morning in bed to find myself awake and went forth to wake up everybody else. You know, unless there's nothing good on TV, you got nothing better to do, you might as well leave. That I found myself awake. Congratulate him. Shake your hand. Sam, you have never heard of such a thing. You're pleased. But since it's just us talking, I'm telling you, go watch TV. Or worse yet, run for it. Here's one I just wanted to get to, this one part of it. It was somebody pointing out them beginning to make observations of how on the ordinary level time does begin to take its toll on people. That one can observe aging, draining energy, the suppleness of people, etc. And the question of observation concluded, it was seen in a new way how closely tied to the body, how closely tied the body and spirit seem to be. They cannot be separated. I got someone just wanted to read. Who is this person? Is this a person after all? Things keep changing. Something in me is about to bloom. I've never known the people around me were so marvelous or so beautiful. I trust that includes all of us. Here's one that somebody wrote me a note related to the task of finalizing something. You know, artificially, arbitrarily, willfully, consciously. The task, the conflict that I took as my task, was I was going to rectify a feeling of anger I had toward some certain people. And as I was thinking about how to tell them this, it became suddenly clear to me that they probably did not even know it. They were not even aware that I felt this way. I noticed how funny it was to have this going on in me and them not even know it. I told you it was a trick. And that's just the beginning. I was observing water rolling down the street, and it seemed to me to have three distinct patterns. One, moving waves. Two, stationary waves. Three, one type crossing or changing into the other, as determined by the shape of the street or the other prevailing conditions. Could this in some way be a reflection of the postures you mentioned? Could it in fact be a reflection of the three forces? Remember, that means that doesn't say yes or no. That just All right, let me explain. I don't guess I ever told you the name, but what's going to start at sunrise in the morning is the beginning of St. Quantum's Festival. Now, those of you, I know he's a very little-known saint. Of course, as some of you may suspect, he is so little-known because of the fact that I conjured him up. He is our saint. Those of you who don't recall any of your college physics, they refer to the quantum theory as being mere what they can see, the observation that on the atomic level, getting down to what they're trying to find, the basic building blocks of all reality, that such subatomic particles, or atomic particles, do not emit, do not give out, or they do not absorb energy in a consistent fashion. It goes in spurts. It can be measured, hence the term the quantum. Little packages that don't just run consistently. Now, can anyone see any real quick connection of those who might be inclined to try and join in the festivities of our St. Quantum's Day, since all of you should begin to get some suspicion that things are not running consistently, everything is not stable like all of humanity believes, then twice a year, it's the first Saturday in spring and the first Saturday in fall, Friday and Saturday, is that you have the opportunity, as best you can, to willfully throw yourself back into this inconsistency. And here's the way it goes, if I haven't made it clear. And it's this Saturday is the culmination. I guess that I can call it the good part, but I'll leave it to you. On the Friday, that is the morning, from sunrise to sunset, fast. You can still do liquids. I don't mean absolute, but keep yourself going if you have to work. Just in liquids, fruit juice. And then starting at sunset tomorrow to midnight Saturday, the first part is the fast, and then is the feast part. Is the culmination of St. Quantum's celebration. It's from sunset Friday until midnight Saturday. All rules, all bets are off, except two. Still no kind of casual playing around sex within this group, and no meat of any kind. But other than that, take all the drugs you can get as drunk as you can, be as hostile as you can, kick other people's machines, wallow in self-pity. Anything that I've ever said directly not to do, or anything that you inferred that you shouldn't do, other than sex and here in the group and meat, other than those two, anything else in the world, all bets are off. Just wallow in it. Just everything, anything and everything except those two exceptions. Then you look forward, 6 months from now, do it again. I want Pam and Kiro to get me up a list tonight for you people to work with them too, because I want to start having the plays performed here to be read starting Monday night. And Pam and Kiro, between you two getting with the people, will you people go to them and tell them what night you can do it, so they can get some sort of schedule. See, I mean, we can do a night, and you tell them how many pages or how long. If you, I assume, has everyone timed their play or got some idea? Tell them how long you think it will run, have it read, so they can get the schedule. But everyone who can, I want you to be here, because you'll find that, as always, it can be trickerous. I want you to be here if your play is not being done, if you're not in it. I want everyone to remember Rachel and Sandy. Seems to be all right, but she had a misfortune. And remember the people still up on the coast and the people in New York. And I want to give you a small addition to the numbers. Everyone knows Romway, the 1 foot. Go ahead and do it normally as you do the numbers. But then, as a conclusion, go ahead and do Romway on both feet. And just wait a second. But then go back and repeat it. So I want you to do it this way. You have to go 1 foot and go back in the position. But I want you to, and with 3 deep breaths on each foot, is I want you to try and to break open. I know that everyone's still far from believing that you know what I'm talking about. Try, once you get in that position, you're going to find that the easiest way, you're getting closer to it, is try and stretch the head as high, straight up as you can, and to arch the back in that position. And just take, forget the ordinary breathing of the numbers, but just go and take it up. Just try and push, not just artificially turn your head back, but try and push it up. And then arch your back as much as you can while still keeping your balance. Do it 3 times on each foot. Reverse the foot and do it. Use that as the conclusion of the numbers each time. Well, you're going to piss and dance. In some sort of acceptable order, that is.
That concludes this talk. Be sure to visit us at jancox.com, where you can search through 3,000 talks for topics of interest, or just leave us a message.